Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Yo! See, I don't always want to start with hello. So last week it was good day, this time it's yo. How did that work? It wasn't very good, was it? Don't worry, I'll go back to hello next week. Anyway, yo, spinning platesters. Oh God, this is terrible. I sound like someone who's trying to be young and down with the kids. That's not even my normal stance. I know I'm not cool. I'm not the Fonz. How are you? I hope everything is okay. I have a lovely guest this week, actually, someone I thought of right at the beginning to speak to for Spinning Plates. She's someone I've known for a little while. Her name is Julie Dean, and she set up a company called the Cambridge Satchel Company. She's built up this company all by herself, starting off with making her satchels, her beautiful satchels, in the kitchen of her own home. And now it is a multi-million pound international company. But actually, that for me is not the most exciting bit of her story. Sure, it's exciting. But the most exciting bit for me is that she set it up in response to needing to find some cash for her kids' school fees. So her children are now, I think they are now 14 and 18, I think. Julie will help me clarify this in the early bits of our chat. But when they were about, let's say, 8 and 12, she really needed to find money for school fees, and so sat down with a bit of paper and a spreadsheet at the end of the final bit of summer term and worked out all her best ideas for getting enough money to pay the school fees at the beginning of the autumn term. So I think she had something like, you know, 2.5 months to find this money. So, you know, what an amazing thing that is to have that drive. But also how incredible that out of the idea just to start school fees, she didn't stop there and think, no, there's more I can do. There's more ways to build this company, more ways to expand. I think that's pretty exciting. So I'm looking forward to hearing her story. And she's someone that I first met because I love the satchels, actually. I'm a big fan of them. I found them when I was looking for a satchel, and a friend of mine called Peter said, oh, I've just discovered this new company called Cambridge Satchel, have a look. And he sent me a link to the website, and I thought, oh, they're really gorgeous. And I've bought them for my sisters and my kids. They all have their own little monogram satchels. They're very classic leather, British made, little sort of traditional school satchels. And she now does other things too, but it's the satchel that is kind of the sort of keystone of what the company is about. And they're gorgeous. And so is Julie. So I went to talk to her at the British Library, one of the quietest spots. We did a podcast recording. She was very generous with her time, and I think also will probably inspire a few of you if you've got sort of any entrepreneurial leanings. She's your woman. She's got your back, and she's hoping you succeed. So have a listen, and you know what I'm going to do. I mean, I might start with a yo rather than a hello, but I'm still going to finish with a bit of tea making because it's my favourite drink of the whole day. So I'm off to go and put the kettle on, and I'll see you on the other side. Enjoy. Thank you for coming to find me again. See you in a bit. When I first had the idea to do this podcast about being a working mother, you were possibly the first name I wrote down, actually, Julie, because for a long time now, I've been so in awe. You know, I'm a big fan of your company anyway, the Cambridge Satchel Company. Thank and you. I like to think I had one of the original satchels.
You did.
And I was trying to think how long ago that was now. And I'm thinking, was it 12, 13 years?
It's 12 years.
It's 12 years, okay.
Cool. And it was literally from the very unimpressive website that I coded myself.
Ah, did you?
And so how you managed to process that payment is a complete
very
mystery.
Easily. Oh, don't worry. If I want to buy something, I'm dogged. Yeah, don't worry. It's going to happen.
Yeah, you're going to carry on. You're going to carry on, yes. And I remember it so vividly because we didn't have that many orders every day, and anyone starting their own business starts out that way, and it's like, got an order, and you set up a notification on your phone so it pings when you get an order, and so it pinged, and we'd had two orders that day, so I was already feeling like a winner, and we were watching Emily and Max had one of these slightly, you know, when your children are 6 and 8 and you take them to do like a tennis lesson after school or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're sitting there and you're trying to look like you're really engaged, but you're sort of thinking, oof, this isn't, you know.
Yeah, I did that at my swimming lesson yesterday.
So you did, that's right. And I just remember it so well. We were sitting, it was me and my mum, and I heard a ping, and I looked at my phone and it said S. Ellis Baxter. And I looked at it and I thought, oh, this is so exciting. And dashed off and phoned the number on the order. And I said, you know, are you the Sophie Ellis-Bextor? And I was so impressed because you said, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, the singer.
And sort of like, one.
As opposed to Sophie Ellis-Bextor, the home decorator or painter or the
always,
baker.
You know what, I'm always open-minded to the fact there might be another Ellis-Bextor out there. I've never met one. As far as I'm aware, the only one.
But that really impressed me. That really, really impressed me. You were one of the first.
Ah, yay. Well, I have heard, actually, that when there's a new business, you know, set up by an entrepreneur such as yourself, that every time someone makes a purchase, you know, someone out there does a little happy dance of, yay, another order. So
yeah.
I'm glad I was responsible for a little bit of a boogie that day. That was really around the beginning. The reason, as I say, I wanted to speak to you is because I really am so excited and motivated when I hear stories about women like you who see have a desire for something, see an opportunity and just think, I'm just going to go and do that. Because I think probably, possibly, the logic of you starting the Cambridge Satchel Company from needing to find a satchel and not being able to find one, that might seem like something, well, anyone could have had that thought and then started a business. But actually, I think you're so in the minority when it comes to actually the practicalities of getting started. And now we sit here today and we're in the British Library, where you tell me you're, is it Entrepreneur in Residence?
I am.
Which is an awesome title.
I feel like I should have a flag.
Yeah, a flag and a badge or something, ribbons on it, I don't know. And the reason you now are Entrepreneur in Residence is because you can now speak to other entrepreneurs about starting their own business, as Cambridge Satchel is so very, very successful.
And I mean, I often think of it as the only way I can describe it is it's like my third child. And that makes it very different to the way that CEOs, if they're just brought in and it's a job and then they go to another company and it's a job and then they go to another company, they'll never quite have that connection that you do. And Cambridge Satchel was set up so that my kids could go to a brilliant school, you know, because I'm such a believer in the best thing you can do, the best gift you can give your children is a good education, because then they can just go and take on the world, you know, because they'll just and have the confidence to go anywhere and do anything. And I think that it was really important in the whole journey of Cambridge Central that to keep in mind why you start your business, you know, because whatever happened, and it made me very brave, whatever happened with Cambridge Satchel along the way, after I'd paid those school fees, I would feel like a winner because that box was ticked. You know, that's why it was set up. It was set up to do that. And, you know, my mum and I, we did that, you know, and that's just such a huge sense of pride. Whereas I think that if you're setting it up with some goalpost that keeps moving, you're never going to feel like you've achieved something.
Right.
And I think that the really important thing is that people just think why they're doing it, because it might be they want to make enough money for a nice holiday every year, you know, and they want to do it as a lifestyle business. That doesn't make it any less valid than a business that ends up being big. You know, I think that's the really important thing. You can have a small business that is just a beautiful business and it fits in with the way your life works. It doesn't have to be you get up at five and you do yoga and you read every single magazine and then you get into work and make yourself miserable and you never see your children. And it doesn't have to be that way. And I think that's why in many ways having your own business works so brilliantly for women with children particularly.
So when it was when they were 6 and 8 roughly,
six and eight
she set up the business.
And
I know you're talking a lot about you know that important connection with your own business, but it must be intrinsic to it also what the product is, because it must be possible to love the idea of running a business but fall out of in and out of love with the thing you're actually doing, or does it not really quite work like that? I don't know.
I think that I knew that I had to make school fees. You know, this is really, really clear target, and a clear target helps.
Right.
I see that sometimes speaking to people in startups here when they come through the business and IP center, sometimes they'll say, well, I have this idea, but I need to read a few more business books, or I have this idea and I can't quite decide what to call the company yet. And sometimes if you have enough constraints, so my constraints were I needed to make enough for two sets of school fees, and those school fees were 12,000 per child and there's two children, and that's after tax.
Yeah, wow.
I had a startup fund of £600. I know I'm not comfortable with debt or borrowing. And I had the school summer holidays. So
wow.
So when you've got really, really clear constraints, it sort of makes it so that you can't sit around and think, oh, I'll read another book.
So for you, that gave you real... Because for some people, because you call it constraints, for some people that's just an immense pressure, which maybe finds it a very difficult place for creativity. It kind of can actually kind of go like, make you feel like I just actually don't know the way to do that.
And afterwards, you know, because I worked a lot with Google and was on the Google Chrome advert and all that kind of exciting stuff later on. But speaking to people at Google, they said, oh, at Google, the set of constraints you had do actually qualify as a moonshot. You know, Google would have called it
What's
a moonshot.
That? What's a moonshot?
A moonshot is when you set out to do something that's virtually impossible.
Okay.
And so I was quite glad that it wasn't, I didn't know it was
You've
a moonshot.
You've got to do a bag called the moonshot bag, by the way.
The moonshot bag.
Yeah.
This is the one to do. But I think that in those early days, it was a very logical thing. This is the amount of money that I need to make. This is how much I have. This is how long I have. I'm going to make a list of 10 ideas.
Okay, I was going to say to you, where did you spring
Excel from? Spreadsheet. It's always the place to start. Yeah. 10 ideas of things to make school fees.
Did you try more than one of them?
No, I'm quite binary, really. It is literally a naught or one. And so I made the list on the spreadsheet, and then I had the columns, you know, does it need more than £600 upfront?
Mm-hmm.
What would happen if I was run over by a bus or had a heart attack because I worked too hard?
There was a column about that.
Yes.
Okay.
And then there was one then that sort of said, does the cash flow work? Would the cash come in a way that would meet school fee bills?
Right.
And so there were, you know, a few columns.
Yeah.
And then each of the 10 ideas was given a number out of 10 for each of the columns. And then it was literally the one with the biggest number.
Okay.
Was what I was going to do.
Can you remember some of the other 10 ideas?
I can, but I've been offered a really good book deal in the future, and that is like the plan B. That's if you know, everything goes pear-shaped and we're all like eaten alive by locusts or viruses, yeah, or something awful, God forbid. So
that's in that column, the one with the bus running over and all that.
That's
the locust.
Yeah, that's right. And so it was, that's the idea that had the most points, so that's what I'm doing. And I look back on sort of my notebook, and it was, once I've picked what I'm doing, the amount of time I allocated for each job was tiny. You know, now that I know what startups are like, and I've met so many people who've started up and met so many people in the whole venture capital, private equity world and the corporate world. And so the one thing I would say is, at the time, it seemed perfectly reasonable. It's just like, think of a business name, 20 minutes, you know, because you can have a cup of tea, 20 minutes break. It's the business name, talk to my mum, what about this, what about that? It's not going to take more than 20 minutes. Logo, maybe use the rest of the hour for that, but, you know, there could be some leeway in there. And there were all these things that seemed completely reasonable and logical. And now that I've seen how much people spend on some of these things, and these agencies. And,
yes, I bet, yes.
And the number of... So the logo was... Well, the name was quite funny. I remember talking to my mum and I said, I sort of feel like no need to overthink this, you know, where... We're in Cambridge and we sell satchels. Cambridge Satchel Company, what do you think? Yes, okay. I'm thinking, what do I do with the rest of my...
Yeah, I've got 19 minutes.
More,
yeah, exactly. 19 minutes 40 left.
I'm really winning on this. And then the logo, I thought, I need something, because everybody knows a logo, you have some words and you have like a little drawing. So the word should be the Cambridge Satchel Company, and the drawing should be something to do with Cambridge. And so I thought, punting is to do with Cambridge. So I drew a little man with punt pole, and I looked at it and I thought, no, this looks really dodgy. It looks like at best, a man with like a snooker cue.
But, yeah.
You know, at worst, like a pole dancer. This is really bad.
Yeah.
This is bad. So I thought, no, take a step back. What else, Cambridge? Bikes, you know, it's a nightmare to drive there. Bikes, let's do like a little bike, and then went on to Word, and got a sort of copyright free clip art thing of a bike, and then wrote the Cambridge Satchel Company above it, and I thought, what font should it be in? And I remembered at some stage, somebody when I was in college saying, use Garamond or Constantia because all of the numbers are clear. And I thought, it's a good thing. So I'll use one of those. Chose the one I liked most. And then it looked actually a bit rubbish because it was just, you know, the name, and I sort of centred the spike under it. It really didn't look like anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't clever enough at it to do like overlaps or underlays or any of this kind of thing. So I thought, well, but then under edit, there's this thing that says word art.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go there and click on, you can bend it.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like bent it. Cambridge Satchel Company logo right there. Just look at it and you think, yes, because the bike, as my mother said, the bike can't go forward or backwards. It's safe there.
Oh, yeah, she's right,
you know, actually. You're not going to lose the bike.
Yeah.
And we just thought, yeah, that's fine. We've got a logo, we've got a name. And I think since then, the number of times, it'll happen at least once, sometimes twice a year, I'll be at a big event in London, and there will be some branding agency presenting at some business thing, and they will say something like, these are the logos we were involved in, and at least once or twice a year, our logo will be on there.
Ah.
And I'll just think, no.
No, you were.
Hand up.
Yeah.
I don't think you were. I'd remember because it was just me and my mum in the kitchen.
Yeah.
You definitely weren't there.
No.
But that's, I suppose, when you know you've done something that's good. And it does make me laugh because some of these agencies, they cost an absolute fortune.
Yes. Yes.
And if they're taking credit for my bended sort of word art logo, then it must be good. So I'm keeping it.
Well, I do wonder as well if there's a correlation between the people that tend to pay those agencies to do that big dosh stuff and the ones that actually end up being successful, because part of making this all work is about it being something that you wake up in the morning and you're feeling motivated and connected.
Yeah.
That must be such a key part of it. And if you've been the one who's had the inception of everything, you sort of so much of the groundwork's already there.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's through another company, you're sort of once removed already, aren't you?
And that was another reason why, you know, it was important to me and still is important to me. All the satchels are made here in the UK because I wanted to see them being made. You know, I just wanted to feel connected to the product. And to me, a satchel is a very British bag.
Very British, yes.
You know, so it needs to be made here. And I just know that it would have been cheaper. It would have been easier in many ways to have made it overseas, but if they just arrived in a shipping container, like loads and loads of them from, you know, I don't know, anywhere else, it just wouldn't have felt the same as going and just picking them up. It was important, and that connection to what we do is important.
Yeah.
So it's and I just love that my mum was there, you know, right through every step of the way. And she'd be in dispatch sometimes and she'd say, I've got to get these bags to these people, you know, I've got to get these bags to she'd have the sort of, we'd be standing in the post office. We were the nightmare people because we would be
having parcels.
Armfuls of parcels going all over the world. And we were the people you didn't want to stand behind.
You're like, oh, no, it's those people from the Cambridge Satchel Company again. We've got so many, I've got to work out the postage.
I know, and all the sizes are different. Yes. And they're going to different places and, yeah.
But actually, there's quite a nice serendipity when you're talking about the way that you came up with the name of the company and the logo. And actually, the fact that it is quite sort of practical really suits a satchel, doesn't it? You don't really want it to be something where you can't imagine what it is or where it's from.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think it actually all ties in really nicely. What was it? Is it true that it's because you couldn't find satchels for your kids then?
Yeah, that's it. It is. Yeah. And that's why it sprung to mind when I was trying to think of my list of 10. Because I just got so sick of going to somewhere. I think it was, you know, you'd go to some sports place and get some school bag and then it would be nylon-y. So it would get dirty and then you can't clean it and it looks a bit grubby. Or it would have some logo on it that they liked at the time and then they don't like 6 months later. And the zip is really, really cheap, so it breaks really quickly. Yeah. Or then it's some plasticky way that they attach the strap on and then it's sort of like you can see the cracks going across and then it sort of starts just falling and then the strap's gone. And at the end you just think, I've just had enough of this.
Yeah.
I don't want to keep buying these rubbish bags. And I was thinking back to when I was in school, I had a satchel and it never gave me any cause for concern. It took me all the way through.
Yeah.
Look better at the end than at the beginning.
That's what I was going to say. The thing about those other bags is that they start their life at their best and then they get worse. Whereas with a satchel, the more you use it, the softer it gets, the more that they're all worn in. It's part of its charm, isn't it?
It is. It is very much part of its charm. And I just thought, this isn't right. And I was so shocked when I was looking for, you know, for satchels, Family and Max. I was so stunned that you couldn't get them anywhere.
Mm.
So it was that irritation made it like forefront in my mind.
Yeah, well, that's, I think the necessity is the mother of invention, right? You're looking for something. And what did your kids think when you started sitting down at the table and working out what to, the business? Were they totally aware at the beginning of, like, you're going to start these schools?
And I think that's the, you know, your children pick up on the attitudes in the house.
Mm.
And my mum is just sort of like, your mother's starting a business, it's going to pay for you to go to a good school. It's just like black and white. That's what she's doing.
Okay, great.
You know, and I think if you've got somebody in your corner with that kind of sort of real belief in you,
yes,
that's what you'll need, because the minute you go out and you go to the yard and somebody says, oh, I hear you're going to start a business, you're going to sell satchels. Well, if it had been a good idea, somebody else would have done it by now.
Yeah, it's very easy to be demotivated, isn't it?
So easy.
And so many people have got an opinion when it's new.
Yeah, and it's just because they haven't done it. Mm. You know, it's just because they are choosing not to do that. Yeah. And so it's like, well, if it was so easy, somebody else would have done it. If it was a good idea, somebody else would have done it. And you hear it so many times.
Yes.
You really need that person who is just going to come up and say, she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Yeah.
You know, you're onto something here and it's so exciting. As soon as we get home, we'll do the reading, magic key, get it done. And then take some more photos of the bags. It'll be so exciting. And just getting everybody involved.
Yeah.
I think that's the other thing. Getting Emily and Max were so involved, you know, from the first photo shoot, you know, of picking them up from school. And I had 6 satchels at that point. That was like stock. And I didn't know there were, you know, the difference between stock and props. And there they were. We'll take some at the back of King's and then we'll go to the Orchard Tea Room and then we'll do some more. And at some point, one of them fell over and their socks were dirty. And you just think, just pressing on, just pressing on, pushing on. But it felt like the family sorting out their problem.
You mean the kids too?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Everybody was in it. You know, it's like, oh, did we sell any today? How is it going? Do you want me to do FedEx labels? You know, and they were always really, really helpful. And I remember even when they were little, I'd just say to them, it's really important to know how many you have of each size, who's going to help me count, you know, and all these various stock counts would go on and... the stock locations were sort of like the spare room wardrobe. You know, the boxes under the stairs and all this kind of thing. But getting everybody involved, it doesn't have to be a thing that you feel takes you out of the family. And I think that's different to a lot of work things.
Yes.
Where they can't be part of what you're doing.
Absolutely, yeah. If you ask most people what their parents were doing in their workplace when they were age 6 or 8, they won't really be able to tell you what their working day looked like, or you know, imagine that environment or what kind of issues they were having or the how it would even begin, the inception of it. So I think your children must actually have real memories of that time,
real memories of it, you know, real memories of I remember one of the first shops that we were selling to was Urban Outfitters in the States. It wasn't even Urban Outfitters here. And they phoned and they just, that's the great thing about the internet, you can't really tell the size of company you're dealing with, although my misaligned buttons should have given them a bit of a clue, I think. But they said, do you have any photos of famous, of celebrities wearing your bags and all that? And this was in the early, early days. No, because I did have a photo of you, but it was, like, really disrespectful to use it. So
that would not have impressed Urban Outfitters USA anyway. I don't think they would We've got our own Sophia Spector, and she's a plumber.
She's a plumber. Yeah, and she can make muffins.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so I thought, I need celebrity. I don't have celebrity shots. It's not like we had some huge budget to go and do gifting or anything. Like, we just didn't. But I did have this little app that I downloaded. It's something like £15, maybe. Because I didn't have Photoshop, but I had to do all of the photos for the website.
Mm.
And it was this little app. It was called Pixelmator, and it did everything Photoshop would do. And
did you Photoshop your satchels onto celebrities?
Yes, I did.
That's brilliant.
100%.
Here's P. Diddy wearing a Cambridge satchel.
Yeah, no, I was cleverer than that because I thought, I don't want to get into trouble. So the way to get around this is to make it obvious that they're Photoshopped on.
Oh, that's clever.
And then I'm not going to get into trouble. So I sent them...
Obvious or obvious if someone's really looking to know about it? You mean like you're still hoping to that they would look at
well,
it quickly?
Well, my first one was I had King Kong on top of the Empire State Building with a red 14-inch satchel on.
Got it.
Which I think looked good on
him. He would have actually really liked it in real life.
I think it looked good. The scale was questionable.
Yeah.
But so I had him. Then I did Elvis Presley from the Jailhouse Rock scene because the colours were working for me.
Yeah.
I put a bag on him. And then I thought, even if people are sad and depressed, a good bag makes them feel happier.
Mm.
And so I put a little bag on that painting, you know, the Munch, the screen. Yeah. Where he's like, and I sort of put a little bag on it. And I sent those three off. And they really liked them. And they said, you know, these are the most memorable celebrity shots we've ever had. And I think that is something. Don't think that because you don't have the budget, you can't say, yes, I do, you know, because there's usually a way around it that might be a little unconventional, but it's going to make you more memorable anyway, because you're not going to out budget Michael Kors on the on the gifting front or the celebrity placement front. So do something that actually makes them laugh and says a bit about your brand and makes you better with Pixelmator.
Yeah, no, I think that's an amazing way to think. And I suppose that's part of the sort of practical side, that you have to have a little bit of sort of problem solving and thinking there's got to be a way around this.
Yeah.
And, you know, in keeping a character in the dialogue and every aspect, all the sort of satellites that come off your business, so that it always has the heart of it, the ethos of what you're doing.
You're just trying to get something done. Mm. You know, that's all you're trying to do. And I think that the urban one was hard then because they wanted them in these big boxes with that nylon banding tape around with the metal sort of closures on.
Yes.
And I didn't know how to do that. So I asked Alec, who is manufacturing the satchels up in Hull, and he said, oh, I'll send you the machine. I've got, you know, a few of these machines. They're just like a handheld thing. You can get it from eBay or something. But he sent me one of these machines and some metal clasps and some nylon banding. And I looked at it, didn't have the first clue what to do with this machine. But then it's like, thank you, YouTube.
No, yes. Because
on YouTube, there it is. And somebody's doing it and I'm sort of following it along on my YouTube thing. And Urban got their order and the bands were on there and felt really, really good about it. And I think that is, we're so lucky right now, because it's like when your washing machine doesn't drain, it's F22 error. You go to YouTube and you give it a go.
I literally did that the other day with my washing machine. I managed to fix it with something on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I felt great.
I feel great.
Otherwise, I would have just got a plumber out and...
I know.
And you've got payloads and...
Call actually, out fee.
And he would have been laughing.
And they say something really condescending, like, don't worry, love, I'm here. Mm, you know, you just don't need it.
No, don't need it.
So YouTube has... It's a game changer.
It is. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
I know you're not going to talk about the other 10 ideas you had about before the satchel, but is starting businesses something you've done lots and... What was sort of happening pre-Cambridge Satchel with you? You've been working since your children were small?
I went to Cambridge, did natural sciences when I was 17. I was like obsessed with going to Cambridge, obsessed, and did that. But then my dad was very, very ill, and when I graduated, I needed to go home and sort of be helpful. So I went back to Swansea, and I thought I need a decent job, you know, I need a good job. And I remember saying to my mum, I'm going to get a job today, and going in. And I went to lawyers and accountants, and I ended up being offered a job by Deloitte because I sat on their stairs and I wouldn't go away. And in the end, I was offered a job, and I trained with Deloitte. And that was an excellent grounding. It really was, because it meant that suddenly numbers... You know, cash flows and tax and things like that were fine, because I'd done it and I qualified as an accountant.
That must be a pretty helpful skill to have if you're setting
up a
business.
It's a fantastic skill to have.
It's a good skill to have, full stop, actually, accountants, yes, I'd imagine.
It's a really, really...
Just confidence around numbers.
And going around as an auditor, I mean, at times was quite boring, but... there were times as well. I was part of a small practice in South Wales, so the places I'd go out to audit were small businesses.
Mm.
And that was really interesting, because I could see issues they were having and problems they were having, and how cash is king and cash flow is king. And, you know, all of that kind of, and what a stock take is and why you need to know exactly how much of everything you have. And so that was a really, it was a brilliant base. And I actually moved with Deloitte over to Chicago and lived over there for five years.
Oh, wow, I didn't realise that.
But then when my dad got really ill, moved back and started up the fundraising office, the development office in my college in Cambridge, which, I mean, I had an accounting background, but... And I think...
This is all pre-babies, all this?
Pre-babies. Mm. And so that was really, really good because... They gave me the sort of the latitude to just I needed to raise money for the college and raising money you can just go around and ask people to give donations and all this and support their college which you know it's got a really lovely base of people that went there, but it also meant I got the chance to do some limited edition prints and raise money in more of a kind of entrepreneurial way. And then I have a real love of the gargoyles on the front of the college. And so we did some garden ornaments and some bookends based on the gargoyles as another way of making money. And so that was, I think that was really helpful. Mm. Going through that, going through those processes was helpful.
Yeah.
But then when I found I was expecting Emily, I took a career break. I was a stay-at-home mom for... In the end, 8 years.
Oh, right.
And so...
So all the way up to actually the Cambridge Satchel?
Yeah, until Cambridge Satchel. And I sort of think that sometimes a lot of women are very nervous of taking a break. They think they lose their career momentum and they can't do... And it for me, that definitely wasn't the case.
Mm.
You know, it really wasn't the case. And
I think you're very right that a lot of people are really frightened of that. Definitely.
They're really frightened of it because there's this... I suppose if you're on a corporate ladder and you want to stay in that particular place on that ladder, then that may be different.
Mm.
But if you're going to take time out... And then I didn't really want to go back... into accountancy because I loved taking them to school. Mm. I loved picking them up from school. And I just couldn't see how some of the things that meant the most to me, being there and taking them on little day trips or if they're ill, you know, if they're ill, I didn't want them to feel like a nuisance because I'm supposed to go to work. You're an inconvenience. You're ill. What am I supposed to do with you? You've been sick. Ah, it's another 24 hours. You can't go in. That's really, really stressful. So I just thought if there was any way at all I could solve this school fee problem and do it in a way that fitted around having a six-year-old and an eight-year-old, then that would be the dream. And I think that once you recognise that that's the dream, you accept all of the challenges and the things that are a lot less comfortable than having a regular paycheck and pension and health insurance and all these things that you just don't have when you first start out yourself.
So do you think you always thought you would ultimately go back into some kind of business, even if it hadn't been born out of needing these school fees?
I remember being a little bit devastated when I realised that my children were reaching that age when other children were more interesting than me. And so they wanted to see their friends and spend more time and then there's sleepovers and as they grow up. The stay-at-home mum part for me was never that I wanted to be home cooking, cleaning and washing up. But as they were growing up, I could see that the fun stuff, the reason I was staying at home, the really fantastic bits were getting less and less. And it was getting more about taking care of the house and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And I just didn't... I really started noticing as well that they'd come back from school and every day they had learned something.
Mm.
You know, they were developing, they were moving forward and they were learning things and they were doing things and they were excited about things, whereas I, at that stage, wasn't really learning things. I wasn't doing things. I wasn't developing things. I was I was still, as you know, TED Talks weren't a big thing then, so I'd have probably been obsessed with TED Talks probably at that stage. But it just was becoming more apparent to me that I wanted to be part of something in the world. I wanted to be in the world and not just watch the world. You know, I didn't want to just watch people do things on TV and read about people doing things in the newspaper and not be doing stuff myself.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's what Cambridge Satchel has managed to do.
Yeah.
You know, and
then some.
Then some.
Yeah.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You know, you're clearly someone that's quite into your problem solving and the practicality stuff. So some people, that would be a thing they say, well, we'd love to send you to that school, but we simply can't afford it. So we're going to find a different thing. So maybe somewhere consciously or subconsciously,
they're sort seeking of out a challenge.
Having this thing of going, I'm going to, they're going to be starting in September. And in the meantime, I've got £600 on the spreadsheet and mustn't get run over by a bus. But if I do, it's okay with the satchel. So.
exactly. Yeah. Alex making them. So it's still good.
Yeah, exactly. Something had to sort of give it that shape, that drive, because that is definitely not the way everybody's mind would work in a similar circumstance.
And I think that I've learned that the hard way, because it was easy in the beginning when it was just me and my mum, and then, you know, there was Lottie, this a girl, it was her first job and she's just out of school. And before I started hiring a team, and before I started hiring a lot of people, I didn't realise what a poor communicator I can be. You know, I thought that things were so obvious because everybody must think the same way.
Yeah.
And then, so I wouldn't bother explaining them because it was so obvious everybody would think the same way. And then gradually, you know, people would come back and say, here it is, this is what we've done. And I'd look at it and think, why would you do that? You know, why would you obviously not do that?
Mm.
And so that's been a learning, and it's been something that I've tried to get better at, but, you know, with I don't know, limited success, I think, sometimes. And I'm in the process at the moment, and this is 12 years on, that I'm in the process of, we've just had another investment, and so the company is growing. And because I'm aware of the importance of a culture within a company and the feel of a company, that we were at this meeting with the investors who have loads of experience, and they said, we need a brand Bible. Julie, you can do that. And my instinct is always to say, you know, with confidence, yes, I can. You know, yes, I am, absolutely, that is what I'm doing. And I made a note at the side and said, Google brand Bible and then do one. And I think that's kind of the approach that you've always got to take.
Yeah.
You know, if your gut says this is a good thing, you say yes, and then you sort of work out how to do it afterwards.
Mm. Yes, yeah. I quite like being like that myself, actually.
Yeah,
there's always a way. You have to,
There's always a way.
Yeah.
You know, it's nobody's asking me to do brain surgery on them this afternoon because, you know, I might probably be best advised to say no to that. But some of the other things, if it's just getting a bag sent to Japan, I mean, that can't be hard, can it? Because the post office knows how to do it. I've just got to wrap it. But in the days when customers would find the website and loads of people, particularly in Sweden, were buying them, it was interesting because I look back and I never thought of that as exporting.
Right, yeah.
Because it was just these people live in Sweden.
Yeah, they just happen to be where you're sending it.
So I'd take it to the post office and they'd send it to Sweden, and it costs more than if you were sending it to Brighton. You know, but I didn't think, oh, hang on, this is exporting. I haven't done a course on exporting. And I think that can be a real pitfall for people.
Oh, yeah, I bet there's a few pitfalls that can. And actually, talking about the happy ending to having your £600 at the beginning of summer holidays is that did you manage to get all the school fee money?
And they're through, so they're both out of school, out the other end.
So was it really, how did that summer go for you then, that first summer?
It's really hard. I mean, the first summer's really hard because trying to get yourself noticed is very, very difficult. You know, I love learning new things, and thank goodness for that, and thank goodness for the internet, because, yes, it's one thing to know you're going to have satchels, but then you've got to find a manufacturer for them. And when nobody is selling satchels in the UK, that's really, really hard.
So was this all complete learning curve for you? Was it all new information?
Everything. Mm. And so trying to find a manufacturer, driving around and in my head, it sort of goes with the theory of everybody knows what I know and thinks the same way. You know, I would stand in a manufacturer and say, a satchel. And they'd look, you know, sort of blank. And I think, why are they being awkward? You know, it's a satchel. It's a school satchel. That's all it is. And so then I came back and said to my mum, they're being really tricky about this. You know, they're all of a sudden there's like pouches on the side and zips and all these kind of things. I said, they're just making out they don't know what I'm talking about, so I'm going to build one. That's what I'm doing, which I now know, you know, it's a prototype. But it was out of two cereal boxes. That's
really?
How I did it. It's like two cereal boxes, like a giant Rice Krispies or something, and then a smaller Crave or something, and sticking it together, putting the brown paper on.
Yeah.
On the outside, getting black Sharpie, drawing the buckles on.
Perfect. Boom.
It's perfect. And then I would feel a little more prepared for my manufacturer's meeting, school satchel.
Well, it's much easier to show people, isn't it, than to describe it.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
but it was, you know, it is this thing. And then pricing, how do you know how to charge? And is there an accepted amount you're supposed to make? Is there a markup? Is there a percentage? You know, how are you supposed to even know that? And so I think everything is a learning curve.
Where were you getting this information? Was this all
the internet?
I
Google
the golden
everything.
Internet.
I remember Googling what is a press release and then, you know, reading, and then said, how do you write one? And I read it. What I wasn't as aware of then that I am now is look at the date of the thing that you're reading.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So I wrote this press release, and I was pretty pleased with myself. And it said press releases always end with three hashtags.
Okay.
You know, so three hashtags at the end, and then you put end of release in caps. And I thought, nailed it, send it off. And somebody phoned me and they were just laughing. I think it was somebody from the Daily Mail, and they were laughing. And they said, haven't seen one like this for a good, like, 30 years.
Oh,
40 years. That's how it used to be done.
You've gone on the internet and found something for 40 years ago.
This is how they used to write a press release, probably when people were just printing in sort of like 1920 or something. Well, but it's fine.
Could
it's
have done
good.
That deliberately. It's fine.
Exactly.
It's a stylistic choice.
It got me noticed. I didn't have the budget for a PR agency, so it was just having to get it done.
Well, I guess as well it helps that the thing you're creating is something that's actually a very classic thing, a satchel. It's not like you're doing something incredibly modern.
Yeah, can you imagine? Done this sort
of high tech, 1950s.
Yeah, 1950s
yeah,
press release.
Exactly. So yeah. It could have been all part of this sort of, I'm taking charm. You back to yesteryear.
I am. I'm taking it right back.
Yeah.
I'm being authentic.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And how did your kids react to suddenly seeing their mum, who'd previously not really been, you know, just been completely available to them and been, what, you know, being at home with them all the time, suddenly doing all this work and presumably being under quite a lot of stress with all of it?
Or
do you not remember
but
it that
they
way?
Were...
Because six is still pretty little, isn't
yeah,
it?
They
it's
are.
Not like that.
Yeah. But we would still do... We would still do loads of stuff with the kids. But it just meant that when they went to bed,
right.
I would really hit it hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the way... Because for the website, I remember I found this free learn how to code thing on the, I think it was on the Microsoft site. And I did that over 3 nights after they'd gone to bed. But, you know, very often I'd be working from sort of like 8 in the evening till 3 in the morning.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And that's why for me it was important I was doing this for the kids.
Right.
Because nothing else would have made me... There's no car in the world that would have made me work with the kind of, like, determination and give me the stamina I needed to do that. But when it was for Emily and Max in the school, it's sort of like, just keep going, because this is the only way out of your situation.
Yeah.
You know, and this is what's going to make things better for them.
So once you had the school fees and things were chugging along, because the thing that's always really impressed me about your company is it's constantly evolved, because you didn't just say, well, we've made a classic satchel and you can buy it in 3 sizes and there you go. There's always new designs coming out and new collaborations and gorgeous colour palettes and all these things. If you've got the original thing done of the school fees, what's the...
I think the thing
growing?
Is then... What I didn't realise is how attached I would get not only to the business, but to the people working in the business.
Well, actually, you did describe it as an extra child, so I guess it's
that's
a pretty big draw.
And so we have like 150 people, and that's 150 mortgages every month
I
sort of feel responsible for. That's 150 Christmases I feel responsible for.
Mm.
And I've had people that have worked for me now for 10 years. We've seen our children grow up together.
Mm.
We've seen them. And it's that stability, you know, for people. And that kind of responsibility was a real big driver for me, that I wasn't going to just... give up and go under because I ticked my box. These people had stood by me at some extraordinarily difficult times.
Yeah.
And so it needs to be fought for. You remember in the relatively early days, one of my manufacturers was stealing the leather.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And making rip-off copycat bags of it. And it was just after we had been noticed at New York Fashion Week, because some of the bloggers had worn the fluorescent bags.
And, the fluorescent bags.
And they'd been noticed because the lights had gone down in the shows and the flash photography picked up all these fluorescent bags in the audience. And New York Times had, you know, his guerrilla takeover of New York Fashion Week. And then all of a sudden...
King Kong.
I know. It's all about primates. And then Bloomingdale's and I think it was Saks came over and wanted to sell the bags there. Mm. And suddenly on the website, I had, at that stage, it was 16,000 bags on backlog. And I had 4 small UK manufacturers, and each one could make a maximum of 150 bags a week.
Oh, well, so what did you do? How did you move forward?
And so then I found a manufacturer who was a bigger manufacturer and who wanted to scale, because some of these, the other ones, they didn't want to scale. They had as much work as they wanted, and complete respect to them. It goes back to when people know what they want their business to be and they're not drawn into the, you know, sudden expansion or whatever. That's what they wanted it to be. And but I found this one that was in sort of financial difficulties and had the potential to really really scale this and to fill this demand. But equally, they were not the kind of people that I'd been lucky enough to come across early on. And I think at the library here, it's one of the very first things I say to people starting up is just always get a manufacturing agreement in place. You know, you have got to protect your ideas. You've got to protect what you do.
Because so what, what is a manufacturing, for someone like me who doesn't really know that, what does that mean?
It sort of sets out the way you're going to work with your manufacturer so okay. that, you know, your designs are your designs, that they can't just take those designs got and it. Sell them sort of independently. That
yeah, that makes total sense, actually. Because once you've told them, once you've given them the cereal box and how it's going to
exactly.
be...
You know, the genius of the cereal exactly. box prototype.
They've got to know that they can't just start making oyster. That for someone else that comes along and goes, oh, I see you make them for her, can you please make some for
exactly.
us as well?
Exactly, yeah. And I had been incredibly fortunate. Those first four that I worked with, it had all been done on a handshake and they were really good, decent people and I would trust them with anything. The one that was going to scale was a different kind of person. And I think when you present someone with a manufacturing agreement, it will show you if there's any hesitancy on their part to sign that maybe this isn't the person you want to be doing your manufacturing.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't know about that. Anyway, so I get a call and lovely Sasha, Liberty London girl, had called and said, I've just been sent a bag. It looks exactly like yours, but it's got this different name on it. Have you changed your name? I said, no, I haven't changed my name. She said, I'm pretty sure it's the same bag. And then 2 nights later, I got a call from someone who was actually working in that factory. And he said, are you the lady that comes down with the boxer dog? Because I would always take my dog down and be walking through the factory and seeing how it was going in the orders. Because it was scary having that many people waiting for bags. And
yeah.
I said, yes. And he was funny because he said, and Rupert's the name of the dog, isn't it? He didn't remember my name at all. Just saying. It was Rupert. Rupert's the name of the... And I said, yes, I'm definitely the woman who comes with the dog called Rupert.
Yeah,
that is me. And he said, I can't sleep because we're taking your stuff and we're making these copy bags. And you know, it just felt like the world was crashing in because on one hand, I was feeling like... As long as I keep communicating with these customers that we're trying to fill their order and they will get what they want, then we'll get there. On the other hand, suddenly I thought, but how can I work with the manufacturer who is my only hope at this stage of filling these orders? And yet now I know that he's not a person I can trust.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's really hard. And as if it wasn't stressful enough, we were making bags for Comme des Garçons' Paris Fashion Week show that were due in like a month's time. And so in the morning I had to phone Comme and say, there's been this issue, but you will still have your bags, but they're not coming from that manufacturer. Because in my head, I just tried to reconcile it and I thought, I know myself and I can't work with somebody that I know is doing this.
Yeah.
I just can't do it.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, well, I'll drop the children at school and then I'm going to have to drive to this factory and somehow take out all the leather and raw materials that's down there and cancel all the orders and get my stuff out. And I thought, there's probably a lot of leather down there because we'd had to buy in a lot. So I phoned the person I bought the leather off and said, I'm going to need you to help me get all the leather out. And he said, and where are we taking it? And I said, I'll give you that address when we meet down there. And I was thinking, I have no idea. Literally no idea. And went down and drove down and went in. And it was totally bewildering to think that somebody that I had seen every week and had these meetings with, I had no idea this was going on in the background. And it was a difficult one. And I said, I know what you're doing, you know, I know you're doing this. And And he decided to sort of like just brazen it out. And he said, yes, but you've got so many people waiting. I'm your biggest manufacturer. You've got really no choice.
Oh.
And he said, you've got to suck it up. And I didn't appreciate that either.
No, I don't appreciate that like it. From here.
No.
No.
And I was sort of, you know, I was already cross going in. This is just winding me up a bit more. And then he did the worst possible thing. And he said, and anyway, you're just a stupid woman. You don't know about manufacturing, so you've got no choice. And he just walked out.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, you know, I'm not actually stupid. You know, I did go to Cambridge at 17, so that's not true anyway. But I don't know how to manufacture these bags. And then I just remember feeling like, but these people do.
Yeah.
You know, these people do. And if he would do that to his best customer, because he was actually making more per bag than I was making on every single bag, but it wasn't clearly enough. And so I thought, I'm just going to appeal to them. And I said, you know, I'm really sorry I can't give another order here because, you know that this is, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
And I said, but, so I'm just guessing this is not a good person and a nice place to work. But if you want to work for me, then you can always just send me an email and let me know. And because I've got a factory and I'm making these myself. And I left and I remember driving home and being on the A14, going to pick Emily and Max up from school and thinking, did I really say, because I've got a factory and I'm going to make these myself? And I went back and, you know, we had dinner and everything. And I remember saying to my mum, oh, we've got to start a factory. And pretty soon, because we've now just lost our big manufacturer.
Wow.
And I think that was the most stressful point.
I was going to ask you about that. So is it how soon into your business was that?
That was 2.5 years in.
Oh, so still pretty early on, really.
Early days. Just as you think you've cracked it, you know, been noticed, you know, and then you get something massive like that.
Yeah.
But that's why I do say to people, you know, protect your ideas, protect your IP. And that's why I love being part of this place, you know, the Business and IP Center, because they allow people to do that free of charge, because you don't have budget for that in the early days.
Exactly, yeah.
But it's so important. And that's a hole I fell into.
Yeah.
So others behind me don't need to fall into the same hole.
And so when you're doing all this and it's, you know, so new, but did the sort of entrepreneur hat always sit quite happily in your head, or did you sometimes feel a bit like...
I didn't feel
maybe
like,
I should just stop. I don't really, you know, I'm still learning. Or I mean, is
no,
it,
because
easy,
then
is
I
it?
Was really angry.
Yeah.
I was really angry because this person who totally didn't deserve it was trying to take my business from me.
But did you always feel, all the situations from the beginning, that you could, there was something in you where you thought, I think I'm just going to be able to get on with this, actually?
Well, just because there wasn't a choice.
Mm.
You know, there wasn't a choice. I was sending, you know, the children were going to a nice school. They weren't going to be pulled out after 2 terms.
Mm.
You know, there isn't a choice.
Mm.
So it'll be fine. It's a challenge. It'll be fine. And the challenges, luckily, don't all come at once. And so as long as you do just focus on the one that's just left closest to your face...
Okay, yeah.
Then... you'll be fine. I think the problem is if you see that one and then you start overthinking it and imagining all the things that could happen if this went wrong, or all the other problems, all the other things you don't know about, then it would become totally overwhelming. But if you can just focus it right down to, this is actually my issue right now. And it was a breaking it down. So it was if I'm going to have a factory, I probably should have a building.
Yeah.
So I need to look on Rightmove, you know, because that's how people find things.
Yeah.
And on Rightmove, hopefully there's a thing that says commercial, and there was, and so that was good. And so I sort of put in the postcode of the evil manufacturer, and because I needed to be able to, if these people did contact me, then I needed to be able to say, yes, you can still use the same bus to get to work or whatever. I couldn't say, well, actually, we're going to be in Sheffield or something.
Yeah,
you know,
we
just couldn't do it. But the hard thing is, because the master plan hadn't included starting a factory, I didn't have a fund to set up a factory. You know, it wasn't... I was reading at that time of the new Mulberry factory, and it was just... I was so envious. It was like... It'll open in 18 months to 2 years' time, and we're getting this European grant, and we've got this fund. And it was being so well thought through, and they said, we'll be working on the footprint of the factory and all this. And I was thinking, I just need a factory really, really quickly, because these people are getting cross. And the only way I can do this is by doing it fast and doing things cheaply. So it's going to have to be I'm going to need to see factories tomorrow, and I'm going to have really cheap places that I'm looking at.
Just get it done.
And just get it done. And by the end of the day, I need to have accepted one. I need to have made it an offer on one. And these were the worst places in the world. I trudged around, and it was down to two. And they had sort of different sort of pros and cons, but they were sort of equally okay. And so I thought, I need some kind of objective measure to make the decision between these two. And so I chose the one with the fewest rat traps.
That's actually pretty strong criteria. I think I would go with that. Less pests.
Yeah, fashion is glamour.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll go with the fewest rat traps. Yep. That's the one that I'm going with. Mm. Unfortunately, that was also the one with the very curved frontage to the building, which did fall off 2 months after we took it on. But, you know, all good in the end.
Yep.
And now we have an amazing factory run by someone who does actually know what he's doing. And that factory, Prince Charles was there with the Duchess of Cornwall last week, and we've won sort of like British Manufacturer of the Year, and we were in the same group as McLaren, and honestly, if I was McLaren, I would be so cheesed off. But they were so classy, and they invited me down and toured McLaren. I was looking at us, and this was sort of pre our factory being as brilliant as it is now, and I was looking around and thinking, my gosh, I really must have bigged up our manufacturing because they are like heads and shoulders above us. But, you know, we got there, but it was a tough time.
And are you, you know, astounded by how much you've managed to achieve sort of post? Because a lot of people I've been talking to might have been doing something and then they have their kids and then they sort of, their life has to sort of shape like this around what they were previously doing. But for you, this is... all the stuff you've been doing is all out of necessity of something you were doing for them. So, you know, how does that, when you think about it like that, like the idea of, if I spoke to you before you'd had any kids, so what would you think of all that's gone by?
I didn't, you know, before that, I didn't know what... Your kids can make you so much better than you are. You know, they can drive you to be so much better than you ever knew you could be. Mm. You know, they can, they just give you that willpower to keep going at 3 in the morning and think, yes, I can get through this, I can do this, because this is important and this means something. And I think that before they came along, I could never have pictured some of the brave choices that I've had to make. But I didn't know how powerful the drive was, you know, and it'll be different for different people, but for me it was just to make things really nice for them.
Yeah.
And I think it's been good for them sort of witnessing this, but for them a lot of things seem ordinary to them that wouldn't have seemed ordinary to me. You know, when I was growing up in South Wales, I remember going into Smith's and there'd be glossy magazines on the shelves in the magazine sort of section in Smith's in Swansea, and I'd think, oh my gosh, that is another world. You know, that's just an untouchable another world. Whereas Emily and Max will look at things and the magazines that would have seemed most out of reach to me, like, you know, the Vogue and the Harper's and all, they look at that and they think, oh yes, I remember, you know, the mum was in that and she was featured in that, and oh, Vanity Fair came to our house and did that. And it's just so different from them. And for them, it just seems so, so normal, some of the things that they've seen me do and be lucky enough to take part in. Whereas I just look back on it and think, wow, that was just incredible.
Mm, definitely. And you've talked about your mum a lot. Did your mum work when you were growing up?
No. And she
had
was...
a working father, your dad?
Yeah. And my mum was really funny because I remember when we made Cambridge Satchel into sort of like a limited company. And I made her, she was the obvious other director of this company. And I gave her business cards at Christmas, this box of cards. And she took the cards out and she said, well, it was a long time coming, but I think I've got a career.
It sounds like she's been intrinsic so, right from the get-go, actually.
Yeah, completely.
She's had a very important job for a long time.
I know, a very important job. But it's just another time. You know, my dad would never have allowed my mother to work. That he would have seen that as a real affront. You know, he would have failed as a husband and a man, I think. And so he was really adamant she couldn't. And so she was stuck doing the boring things. And she could have done so much more. But at least, you know, through this, she's had the chance to see and be part of some really exciting stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was thinking when you were talking about, you know, we've talked a lot about the pressure of the school fees and that summer and the £600, but from sort of listening to you, I wonder if maybe it seems to come so naturally to you, the sort of problem solving and those moonshots that you talked about. The thing about succeeding is that it's not just about having the idea, it's that if, you know, you're sat in, I don't know, a lecture and they're talking about entrepreneurship and making a big business out of a small business, you know, if they say in this room there's 200 of you and the likelihood is, you know, we'll be lucky if two of you make a successful company that lasts, and you have to have that little thing in you that goes, I think that's me, I think I might be that person. I wonder if you hadn't have had kids and motherhood, if you still would have, I feel like you still would have started a business, because it seems to be something that so tessellates with you and how you are about things. Maybe I think a bit of permission or a bit of a incentive, I don't know.
And I think I'm just, you know, I got to the stage of being a bit too awkward to work for other people. You know, I think it works really well for everybody that I just do something else, you know, because it's frustrating to have to work for somebody that you think might not be doing a great job. You know, that would be a really tricky one. To work in surroundings that don't let you have a go at trying something a different way, or because people are very, very comfortable with saying that's not possible because of this, or that's not possible because that's the way the industry does something. But when you come to an industry with no prior knowledge,
yes, exactly,
that gives you such an advantage. It gives you such an edge because you don't know that you're supposed to pay guests to come to your party. You know, you just don't know. It doesn't, and so you come to it, especially as, you know, I was doing this after having children and in my 40s, so I had common sense at that stage, and I had enough self-belief to think, you know, when people would say, you've had this investment, now we'll have this great party, you need to pay all these celebrities to come to your party, I was happy enough to say, I'm not doing that. You know, if they don't want to come to the party, don't come to the party. I thought, if people aren't honestly excited to be part of the opening of your new shop. If they aren't thinking, I really love this brand, I'm going to be part of this, and I want to be part of this, I don't really want them there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there are so many opportunities where people try to tell you that, oh, you don't do that, you need a branding agency, or you don't do that, you need a PR agency, or you don't do that. You know, no PR agency I've come across would have come up with that idea of taking the fluorescent bags, lending them to fashion bloggers and seeing how it goes. You know, it was just a sort of a, why not? This might work and it might not. And I think that by doing as much for yourself as you possibly can, you're really reducing your risk.
Mm.
Because I would have found it crippling to have had debt hanging over me.
Yeah.
That would have been a scary thing. I would have hated that.
Yeah.
Absolutely hated it. So every step of the way, like the first office, when we moved out of the kitchen, which was, I think, a relief to everybody. But when we moved out of the kitchen and thought, I was quite risk averse in many ways and thinking, okay, we'll move out of the kitchen. Maybe we can have a garden building, you know.
And, yeah, yeah.
But then, you know, we had 16,000 on back order, so maybe a garden building you've grown out of.
Yeah.
But I was really clear on minimizing my risk because I didn't want to feel terrified about this debt obligation if things went wrong. So, yes, we'll have an office, but I'm not going to sign up to something that has a 6-year lease on it. You know, or so as it was great, I was able to find something that was a lot more flexible, and so you could just give 3 months' notice, and it was and it was dog friendly, so I could take Rupert with me, and it was just getting something that fitted. And I think that in the current challenging climate, it's good in many ways because it does challenge the way that things were before. And so you can try a pop-up shop and not have to take something on.
Yeah, that's very true.
For a long lease period because you aren't sure it's going to work or that you don't actually need it until you've done it.
Mm. Yeah, and I think actually the internet is also, like you were saying, when you go into something not really knowing all the rules about how those things are normally done, I think actually the internet's been really good in a lot of ways for so many different industries about people just thinking, a sort of a freer way of thinking about making a start in any sort of business, really.
Yeah, because Paris Fashion Week, you know, we went over because that's where the buyers from, you know, loads of different parts of the world come. And but we didn't have budget for a showroom, but we took an Airbnb that was really sort of close, and it had a bedroom so that we could sleep there as well, and it had Wi-Fi, and we set it up in a way that people felt comfortable actually when they came.
Yeah.
It turned out the buyers loved it, you know, because they could come, we could give them a cup of tea, some British biscuits from Marks and Spencer or something.
Yeah.
And it was a bit more of an experience instead of like trudging around the big trade show places. And there was one, I think it was IT, and they came over and there was a bunch of people that we didn't speak the language they were speaking. And I mean, we didn't have translators. We had an Airbnb, you know, just around the corner. But what we did have was Wi-Fi, and that meant we had Google Translate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would type in, hello, where are you from and what would you like to see?
Yeah.
Sort of, and they'd select their language, which was really nice. And sort of like auto-detect language. And they'd be typing something in and it would go back and forth. And we'd both laugh as maybe the translation wasn't as accurate.
Yeah, a bit clunky.
And I'd probably just ask them something completely different. But you know what? It got the job done.
Yeah.
And that's how we started selling to some great places in Asia. Amazing places in Asia, but it was Google Translate. We didn't have a translator, but there's a way of doing it. There's a way of getting it done, and you don't have to pay some amazing person who speaks 12 languages, because the likelihood is the person who comes through the door is going to speak one of the 13th.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, no. Thank you, Google.
Yeah, exactly. Well, just a sort of one last question, really. You've said that the business is like your third child. And in what ways is a business sort of similar and dissimilar to sort of child raising, really? Do you feel like you're the same sort of person when you're a mother as you are when you're having to raise the company?
Yes, because I am very aware that I adopt the same kind of, like, fierce outrage if Cambridge Satchel is being threatened.
Oh, you've got a fierce outrage setting?
I've got a fierce outrage.
Okay, and this is something your children see sometimes?
not usually at all, but I do have that same fierce outrage setting in, like, a parents' evening if I think that somebody is being overly critical of something.
I have that setting.
You know, yeah. or somebody out making some comment about your child or something. It's that fierce outrage setting that really can kick in. It's, like, so deeply personal.
Sort of protective, isn't it, to the point
so
of, like...
So protective, yeah. You know. Mm. Don't tell me my son isn't good at time management when... you've just started this appointment 20 minutes late.
Yeah.
And it is that very deeply personal kind of thing. Yeah. And I think that that's what I feel with Cambridge Satchel. You know, that is something that is right. And also the kind of excitement that you feel when you see an opportunity that is so good for one of your children or so good for Cambridge Satchel that you're really properly, genuinely excited and joyful about it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sort of like, this is going to be great for them in that kind of altruistic way that maybe people aren't in a more corporate environment.
Yeah, I can completely imagine that that's true. The happiness resonates so much more because it matters.
Exactly.
It matters to you.
You know, and just the pride that you can feel when you know you get to work with something in some fantastic place, some amazing brand like Comme des Garçons or Inès de la Fressange in Paris, and you think of all the bags they want to work with, do a collaboration with, they've chosen Cambridge Satchel Company, and that kind of pride, you know, it's almost like a bring to tears pride.
Yeah. That's special.
It's really different from any kind of work experience I've had.
Yeah, I can totally imagine that because it feels, the whole thing of it is personal. From the get-go, it's personal.
Yeah, yeah.
So it comes right from the middle of you, doesn't it?
It does. Things.
Yeah, you sat there once and wrote it down and had all those ideas. So to see it kind of come to fruition like that must be incredibly exciting and rewarding. And actually, I did wonder, when you said that you started the bags, firstly for the school fees, obviously, but also so your kids would use them at school. Did they use the satchels when they went to school, or did they go and have, like, other bags?
they were encouraged.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought.
To use them.
Thank you for the school fees, but I want that nylon bag.
Yeah. What was really, really lovely, though, is I remember when Emily went out and started at union, she phoned back and she said, oh, there's these people in the flat and they've heard of Cambridge Satchel, and this is sort of just like 2 years ago, and you think, yeah we do actually ship to 120 different countries now. Emily's gone outside Cambridge and seeing just the roles that they have found to still be involved, you know, in, like, we named the Sophie bag after you and
yeah, that's exciting. Thank you.
Yeah, and Emily was there and she was involved from an early stage, and Max, who is totally brilliant at photography and an incredible artist, and he's got involved in, like, product development and I think having the chance to be involved in something that's a real thing.
Mm.
It just gives them an idea of worth as well. Mm, you know, that this skyline that he did of Cambridge that's appeared on some of our packaging, that's something he did. We didn't get a graphic designer to do that. He did that. And Emily then getting involved in some of the photo shoots. It's just a very empowering thing. And So I do love having them and having my mum really involved. The dogs are the problem. They're the ones that always bomb the photo shoots. But, the family's been great.
So they're still all very much involved now, all of them, your mum?
Oh, everybody's involved. Yeah. Everybody's involved.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because they need to understand what's happening with the business to sort of understand why maybe I'm sort of more stressed or more tired, or I need them to understand why maybe next week I'm going to need people to really help out at home a bit more because all of this is going on and I need them to pull together. And I think it's a real mistake if you don't allow them to feel part of it.
Yeah. Well, do you think it sort of encouraged your closeness with them, the fact that they've been through all of this? I mean, you know, you would be close with them no matter what, but it's quite a special bonding thing.
I think there is. And I think that as well, they look at what's been created with Cambridge Satchel, and they know that their mum did this so that they would have these opportunities and chances. And that gives them a sense of just how important they are. And I think that is just such a real kind of like demonstration that, yes, it's going to increase your closeness no end.
Yeah, no, that's powerful. I mean, there's not many people I know that could say that their mum or dad actually started a business with just the sole intention of helping them get a better education. That's pretty powerful. I'd imagine quite good for sort of giving them a bit of an emotional guilt trip sometimes as well.
Exactly.
I'm doing so much
what
for you.
What do you mean?
Here.
What do you mean you're not taking the bin out?
Exactly. Exactly.
I started a factory for you.
Exactly. No, I bet they appreciate it no end. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much, Julie. What an amazing conversation.
Thank you.
Really inspiring.
Well, I think that's the best thing. If it just means that somebody out there thinks she did that with £600. I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah, definitely. Because otherwise it can feel almost a bit, not elitist exactly, but just sort of out of your grasp that there's sort of business over here somewhere and you and your ideas down here.
Yeah, because, you know, what I didn't come from a rich family. I didn't come with a business that somebody was going to pass down to me. And I didn't come with a network. I've got the most amazing network now. I didn't have that 10 years ago, but those things can't stop you from doing something.
No, not at all. And do you think that the business will be handed down to them? Is that something they've made any noise about at all, your kids? Or
they do from time to time.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When something looks like it's like really fun.
Then
it looks really, really attractive.
Pick. Yeah.
Not so much when you're counting rat traps.
Yes, exactly. Well, there's the rough with the smooth, isn't there? That's the nature, I'm sure. Well, that's actually parenthood as well as businesses, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So that was Julie Dean. Wasn't that a great story? How amazing is that? And actually, the story that she told about the guy that had been secretly selling off her designs to another satchel company when he shouldn't have been doing that. She actually, when she said to the company, "I'm going to set up by myself, who's coming with me?" Everybody left and came with her except for two people. That's it. I mean, that is testament to how amazing Julie is, isn't it? What an incredible thing. And how amazing that what started off as a sort of a need to find money and a sort of necessity to pay for the kids' education turned into something that's become so much more than that and so big and so important. Anyway, next week I have Thomasina Myers. So she won MasterChef, she set up Oaxaca, and she has lots to say about finding yourself after what she calls her wilderness years. And that noise was Richard walking into the bedroom and discovering I'm talking to you and slamming a door anyway. He's the one that'll have to edit that out. Anyway, speak to you next week and you'll find me and Tommy talking. Thank you so much again. Lots of love. See you soon. Bye.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.